I get the idea. I get the fact that the junior hockey players, and we've talked about this, Dave and myself and other people in this show, there's a ton of money made in junior hockey. And these guys get $50 a week stipend. We get all that, sort of the indentured, you know, we get the aspect of their labor and being rewarded and all this. But as I look at and I contemplate this notion of a Canadian Hockey League Players Association, Michael, the first issue I came up with, are these guys even actually salaried employees?
Yeah, that's going to be a big problem for unionization. And this is the same problem, or at least a similar problem, that NCAA athletes would have in the United States in terms of unionizing. Under labor laws, both in Canada and the United States, normally employees have to be paid salaries in order to be eligible to unionize. I mean, that's sort of generalizing it, but that's a key requirement. And CHL players receive stipends, which could be characterized as salaries, and in some way they are salaries, but they're structured differently because they have other aspects to them. And with the NCAA, of course, players receive scholarships rather than salaries. So, you know, how these athletes are compensated, the structure of that compensation could end up being a big problem for them.
Is there a difference between a union and an association? Could they
not
go that
really
way?
They're functionally the same. They're both able to collectively bargain on behalf of the players in the group. There are some slight differences, and particularly when there's a lockout and there's decertification of a players' association versus decertification of a union. And that actually was a slight issue in the NFL in terms of some of their litigation last year when Tom Brady brought the class action lawsuit against the NFL. And it could end up being an issue in the NHL if there's a lockout and then there's decertification and lawsuits. But for this purpose, there wouldn't be a big issue.
With Michael McCann of SI.com, you know, as I'm doing some reading on this, and I did mention we will have George Larac, who is the executive director of the CHL PA, on the show at 6 o'clock. It seems to me, Michael, that essentially what this group wants here, it seems as if they want a beefing up of the educational endowment aspect of the Canadian Hockey League players, is being run by the Canadian Hockey League. I mean, there's talk about compensation for the use in branding, you know, and events involving Hockey Canada, international events, things of that nature. But just kind of reading between the lines, it almost seems as if what we're talking about here is a way of getting a better educational endowment for players set up.
Yeah, and I think that's a purpose that a lot of people would be sympathetic towards. The fact that getting a better education, particularly between ages 16 and 20, is important. The fact is most of these players are not going to go on to the NHL, and they're not going to make millions as the few that will go on to the NHL will do. So having an education would be a good backdrop for the vast majority of these players, and that's going to cost money. And I think they apparently are frustrated that the league itself isn't providing those types of educational benefits on their own, and they feel like they have to turn to unionization to obtain them, and some other things as well.
I mean, some of the numbers are pretty, you know, the Hockey Canada reported that it netted $22 million on the World Junior Tournament last year. You know, those of us up here in Canada, I mean, God, it's August, you turn on the TV and there's somebody's playing the Russians in some hockey tournament, you know, there's an under 18 or whatever, there always seems to be a hockey tournament on under Hockey Canada's auspices. I think people have to move past the idea that this is a mom and pop operation. There's a lot of money being made in junior hockey these days, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And let's face it, with digital media, online, the ability of people to watch games online, the fact that there are so many television channels, there's a ton of money to be made in selling the broadcast rights to these games and the licensing of these games. And it sort of reminds me back in the 1960s when Kurt Flood filed a lawsuit against Major League Baseball and its commissioner arguing, you know, television is taking off with baseball. It's no longer a small operation, Major League Baseball, and the teams are making a ton of money off of players. He filed a lawsuit, an antitrust lawsuit. It ultimately failed, but it helped get the ability for players to obtain free agency. And, you know, it sort of reminds me of that the CHL, the fact that it is taking off, the fact that it's a lucrative product and it seems to only be escalating, I could understand why players feel like they should get a bigger cut, or at least a cut that they have a say in what it is.
And there's no better sign of the way it's swelling in terms of income than Windsor Spitfires are just fined $400,000 for things they did wrong.
Yeah, they violated some of the player benefit and recruitment policies.
How much are the coaches being paid? I mean, I think that's always telling. We see it in college football. Coaches make millions of dollars a year, and the players don't receive anything other than a scholarship. How much do CHL coaches make? How much do their team executives make? Mm-hmm. How much do their scouts make? That's very telling as to how much money is being made.
Well, and the other thing beyond that, too, Michael, is a lot of times, frankly, I mean, you've got teams where you've got the head coach being a part owner of the team or the general manager being a part owner. I mean, there's an awful lot of, as I said, there's an awful lot of money in this game, and the whole concept interests me because, and I think, Michael, you referred to it a bit, it does sort of butt up against the whole notion of college players being paid for their efforts, because essentially these people they're generating revenue for other people. And I'm not a lawyer, but I think you can make a pretty accurate case, or you can make a case that they don't really get that much in return in terms of a proportion of revenue.
That's exactly right. I mean, one of the benefits for at least players of unionization is that it enables them to collectively bargain salary rules that will probably favor them a lot more than they would get if there isn't collective bargaining.
Right.
So I definitely think there's an argument to be made there. And not only that, where else are these players going to play? I mean, if the American Hockey League, I believe you have to be 20 years old to play there. That could limit the ability of some CHL players who otherwise would play in the AHL, a higher level up, because of an age limit there. I mean, the complexity of this is such that I could see why players feel like if they're not being compensated more through the CHL, they're not going to be compensated at all, maybe playing hockey.
Well, and the other way, a couple of people have mentioned this as well in some of the various forums and chat boards and things of that nature. I mean, if you're a player in the Canadian Hockey League and you're sort of looking for, where do we start or what are we aiming for? Well, you might be able to figure out the average annual value of a U.S. scholarship is, what the average annual value of a U.S. hockey scholarship is, and maybe that's what you ask for. You say, hey, playing junior. I'm not, I'm going.
College tuition in the U.S. is
exactly
nowadays probably about $200,000.
Exactly. So maybe that's what you ask for. Get it put in a, I don't know if endowment's the word or whatever, but there's probably a way to come up with some sort of dollar value here if you really want to look at it.
And I think that's right. And I think, the owners are probably going to be concerned that amount of money is going to be much more than they're willing to pay. And also, I could see some owners of CHL teams saying, look, we bought a franchise under this old system where players received a stipend. If now suddenly we have to pay players essentially $200,000, the value of our franchises may go down a lot too.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting topic. Tell me something, Michael. The whole discussion of paying NCAA players, just to kind of move off this a little bit, where does that sit? Because it does come up every year. You hear people talk about it. Admittedly, not a lot of people within the NCAA. But now that we've moved towards a football a proper playoff structure, for want of a better phrase, are we eventually going to get to the point where these guys are going to get paid, or do you think it'll ever happen?
I think we may not see players paid per se, but I think at a minimum we'll see them compensated at least after they leave college. Ed O'Bannon, the former UCLA basketball player, is the lead plaintiff in a big class action lawsuit against the NCAA, arguing in essence, it's one thing to say we don't get paid while we're playing in college, but while we're student athletes, but I shouldn't be 40 years old and having my nephew play a video game with me in it, I'm not getting compensated for that. I think we're going to see, I wouldn't surprise me if we see some type of litigation settlement in that case where players who are outside of college, those who either graduated or left college, are given some kind of money to recognize the fact that their image is still being used. In terms of current players, I think that's going to be a little harder to get. And I say that because the NCAA qualifies because it's ostensibly to promote education. It's given illegal benefits, and it's also considered not possible under a U.S. labor law for NCAA student athletes to unionize. So the NCAA still has a lot of leverage when it comes to current student athletes, but I think for former ones, there's a chance that players will get something.